Let's turn to politics now. Peter Van Onselen here is here. He's the 10 Network's political editor and a columnist with The Australian. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Hamish.
You listened to that interview with the new drought coordinator, General Shane Stone. Mm. Did some of the responses surprise you?
Well, don't try to get me with a gotcha question like that, Hamish. That was a little bit too direct, what you just asked me.
Is it a gotcha question
about of course it's not.
Climate and its role in the drought? Because, I mean, the website of the Drought Coordinator General talks about it as being a factor in what is occurring.
And peak bodies like the National Farmers Federation have a view on climate change. It's a political issue because the politicians choose to make it a political issue, not because somebody coordinating the drought response, for example, should be concerned about the political impact of offering a view on something that is pertinent to the role at hand. So, no, of course, it wasn't a got your question, but I guess as a former politician and a partisan one, obviously, in the context of that, he just doesn't want to find himself caught between the political stoush. That doesn't make the question unreasonable.
So what's the political stoush about whether climate is a factor in the drought?
It's just a fear within the conservative side of politics that there are those who absolutely refuse to concede that climate change has any impact versus, I guess, on the other side of the political spectrum, those who say that it is the be-all and end-all as an explainer for some of the problems that are going on. So he just doesn't want to, if you like, get lost in that space. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a right to ask the question. It certainly doesn't make it a gotcha question. It's a mainstream question.
So are you saying that there are serious political implications for someone in his position acknowledging the role of climate in drought?
I believe there are, because what it can do is it can create that kind of groundswell within one side or other of politics that the person either doesn't have enough belief or has too much belief in it. And I know that listeners and yourself would be sitting there tearing your hair out at that sort of reality of where the politics is at, but it's been marred in that in Australia now for well over a decade. It's a shame, but people that have that political lens from the past, like Shane Stone does, that's all they think. They think you're just trying to get him as opposed to asking what is a very, very pertinent and legitimate question that a lot of Australians and an increasing number of Australians would always like to know the answer to.
In other news, Anthony Albanese starting a four-day sweep through Queensland, obviously important territory given the election result. He'll tour a coal mine that's had a bit of a reaction already. Is that enough to win back some of the blue-collar vote that Labor is hemorrhaging?
It's not enough, but it's a start, I suppose. He's trying to find a way to get those votes back. Labor is really caught in this space politically, again, I'm talking here, because if it acknowledges, as he started to do, that the mining of coal is something that not only from a public policy perspective, perhaps should continue, but is a lesser of evils if Australia is exporting coal versus if some underdeveloped countries that use it are getting it from more dirty coal sources, coal mines overseas. That is something that then has an impact on inner city seats and on the green vote for the Labor Party. But Labor hardheads, and this is where Albo seems to be going, they're saying, well, that's a price worth paying because green votes come back. Green members of parliament, even if they get elected, vote with us, not with the other side of politics. We need to get those seats back in coal mining communities, particularly in far north Queensland. So this is a cap-in-hand tour by Anthony Albanese to try to show that it's more than lip service. We'll see if that's the case when policy scripts get written down the track.
And the government's also reviewing the $4 billion a year foreign aid budget. Is that code for further cuts, or is this just about how it's distributed?
Well, hopefully it's just about how it's distributed, because it's been cut so many times before. This was always the angst of Julie Bishop when she was Foreign Affairs Minister. But we are creeping up on a budget which is becoming increasingly tight, particularly in the context of them wanting to get that surplus come May next year with the downgrades in economic growth. So the cynic in me says that an ERC looking at ways to slice and dice, there's a lot of painful ways to do it, but domestically in terms of politics, again, unfortunately, I'm talking here, Hamish, politics domestically would say that if you can trim an extra couple of hundred mil here and there off the foreign aid budget, that is a lesser of evils once again compared to trying to do it in one of the service delivery areas that people in Australia rely on.
Peter Van Onselen, good to see you. Last time for the year, so it's been a pleasure doing business.
Merry Christmas and congratulations on your role for next year.
Oh, thank you very much. See you, Peter. Sure. Professor of Politics at Griffith University and the University of WA.